I believe that this film treads the balance incredibly well of creating witty, funny, likeable characters with real emotional lives who are involved in mad horse chases, you know, death-defying leaps and crazy fights, all with a twinkle in the eye and some badass costumes. So, I mean, I don't know what more you want, frankly.
That was Taron Egerton talking about the latest version of Robin Hood. And I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Bregoli.
I'm all a quiver. That's an archery pun.
That's a what pun?
An archery pun. A quiver is the thing you put the arrows in.
Okay.
Wow.
And Bill McCuddy.
This is
here.
Closed caption for the comedy impaired. Thank you, Bill Bregoli. By the way, Taron Egerton is going to be Elton John. We can talk about that too,
because
that'll redeem him for this movie.
Well, we'll talk about Robin Hood. We got a lot to talk about here. We're going to talk about Widows. We're going to talk about Green Book. We're going to talk about The Favorite. We're going to talk about the new Coen Brothers film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
We better hurry up and talk about Widows while it's still in theaters, because I have
Netflix.
A feeling after Thanksgiving weekend it's going to be gone.
And but let's start talking about Robin Hood. Okay, so, you know, there's been so many Robin Hoods over the years. I mean, even before the 1938 Errol.
There was one with Sean Connery called Maid Marian.
That's true. Which was called...
Maid Marian, I just said.
Yes, there you go. So, I guess the definitive one is the 1938 Errol Flynn one. But more recently, they had a Kevin Costner one, and they had a Russell Crowe one. This one is, you know, where those last two that I just mentioned were more serious, this one is strictly for fun. You know, it is, if you saw the Costner or Russell Crowe one, I mean, this one is like an all big-budget action stuff. I talked to the director, Otto Bathurst. You know, there's no historical accuracy, which he says in this at all. The actors are wearing outfits that...
Well, there was no real Robin Hood. So.
Well, it's a legend.
They could take a little license. By the way, we're introducing a new game this week called I Haven't Seen It. Now, here's how it works. I haven't seen Robin Hood, but these guys have. So Neil is going to be positive, and I have a feeling Bill's going to fall into the category that most critics have. And not. So at the end of them describing whether they like or not like it, I'm going to tell you whether I'm going to go see it.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, let me just finish on telling you about this Robin Hood that is opposed to, first of all, it doesn't take place in Sherwood Forest. It's the origin story. It's kind of built like, it's kind of like, you know, one of these action
Marvel
things.
Yeah, they go off
things.
To the Crusades. Robin has a nice manor and a girlfriend, and when he comes back from the Crusades, he's gained a black friend, played by Jamie Foxx, a Moor, as they call
John,
it.
John, not Little John. They just call him John now in this particular one.
He dropped the little, they said, because he told you that he was too tall to be Little John.
Right. That's right. And also, his manor is gone. It's taken by the Sheriff of Nottingham to pay taxes for the war.
Played by Ben Mendelsohn.
And his girlfriend, played by who? Eve Hewson, who was in The Nick.
Bono's daughter.
Yeah, it is Bono's daughter.
Yeah, she was in the
Is
Nick,
she cute?
Actually. She's cute. She has pretty much the worst English accent I've ever heard. She's an American for all intents and purposes.
Did she inherit the sunglasses? Does she wear those?
No, but she has cleavage.
She has cleavage.
It is cleavage.
So here's the deal on this. You know,
this week's uncomfortable Bill Bregoli moment is brought to you by LaCroix.
There'll be more.
I was, before I tell you what I thought of this thing, there's also an addition. You know, it's predominantly an action film, but this is also, there's all these little references to the fact that, you know, even though it takes place in the 15th century in medieval times, that they're stealing from the rich to give to the poor, and that there's corruption, you know, there's parallels to the corruption that's going on today with, you know, what was going on then. And, you know, there's a lot of dialogue.
What corruption going on now? You mean with our president? Is that what you're inferring?
Well, that's what the director was saying, that he was trying to draw parallels to, you know, the 1% getting...
Do they have a casino? In the trailer, it looks like they have a casino.
No.
Aren't they gambling on something that looks like a roulette wheel?
So many versions of Robin Hood. I was not looking forward to this, but I have to tell you, I thought it was a fun time. I enjoyed myself. If you just take it for what it is, I thought the cast was appealing. I thought the action sequences, the big budget action sequences were fun. And, you know, for a little under 2 hours, I enjoyed myself. Apparently you did not.
No, I didn't. No, it was, to me, it was Robin Hood and made for millennials. It's definitely a young cast. The action scenes are pumped up to the point where you're exhausted, but not all that interested in them. I mean, they're firing crossbows like they're automatic weapons. I mean, maybe I need a little accuracy in my historical things.
Explain why that's such an offense to you.
A little historical accuracy.
No, and, but you're also
I'm a fencer. There were no swords in this, though.
All right.
So
no, there were no swords. No swords, but
plenty of arrows winging their way at great speed.
Well, you know,
it just seemed like
it
was.
The director said there's no intent.
Yeah, no, there's no accuracy. I mean, these characters are saying okay. No one said okay in the 1500s.
Well, come on, the Ben Mendelsohn Sheriff of Nottingham character. He's wearing like this tailored suit that looks like it came right off, you know, out of Barney's. It's like something.
Yeah, but
like
it just wasn't fun. I don't know.
They've done that in other kinds of movies. I mean, sure. A Knight's Tale had modern music. I assume this has modern music.
They say okay in The Favorite, actually, which we'll be talking about later. But well,
you really got a thing for okay. You're really not okay with okay.
Yeah, I'm not.
So, Bill, since Bill Bergoglio, I liked it for what it was, and Bill Bergoglio did not. By the way, you didn't like it for what it was. You couldn't just buy into it and just go along for the ride.
No, I really couldn't. I really couldn't. I got bored by it really easily.
Okay, so the new game called I Haven't Seen It, I'm Not Going to See It.
You're not going to see it.
No.
Okay, let's move on.
And apparently neither is anyone else. It's tracking really badly this weekend. And, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio is one of the producers of the film.
It's an Indian Way production.
And, right, so that's his company. And this looks like it's going to lose about $100 million.
Well, let's talk about The Favorite, which opened this week or last. Did it open this week or last?
Are you okay with the way they spell The Favorite, Bill?
Yeah, it's British. Okay. It's very nice.
And this one, it's Queen Anne. Queen Anne, played by Olivia Colman, who they are touting to get a, they're trying to sell his Best Actress Oscar nomination. I think at most she's Best Supporting Actress. But anyway, she's frail and emotionally unstable and very happy to turn over the power of the throne to whichever one of the two women who's vying for the power behind the throne is her favorite.
Ladies in waiting.
Namely, one of them is Emma Stone and the other one is Rachel Weisz. And they also, should I give that plot point away?
Just say they're vying for the queen's affection in more ways than one.
Yes, let's say that. And it's,
as the late Bob Hope would say,
and it's it's a costume period drama, but it's funny. It's a dark comedy.
Yeah.
This is not a Merchant Ivory type of thing. I mean, this is both of these women. It's correct
to the period. We should play the game again because I haven't seen this movie either.
Actually, not really. A lot of the fabrics, supposedly, I was reading some production notes, were actually modern fabrics because they just work better
fabrics,
on screen.
Who cares? Colloquially, are they speaking the Queen's English? And
not quite.
No,
But there's a great scene where a guy who's naked except for a powdered wig is being pelted by pomegranates.
Yeah, where was that?
So
out of nowhere,
twisted.
They just threw that into the movie.
They just threw that in there. There's a fisheye lens. There's a lot of weird stuff. The soundtrack
what
is
was
kind of
that?
Strange.
That scene you're talking about, it was like, it's totally out of context, just thrown in there.
Yeah.
And I
just
think
to show you how strange things
are. It didn't seem like he was not enjoying it. He was like sort of the entertainment or something
that. Yeah, it's just a way of showing that. Things at the top are getting kind of strange in those days.
Well, it's a bawdy tale, and it's a drag-down fight to the death, literally, between Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz for the Queen's affections. And there's a lot of bitchy, surly, biting, dark, satirical dialogue in the movie.
Also a lot of bitchy, surly, biting backfighting about whether or not these three actresses should be considered lead or supporting. And
well, that's what I said. Listen to who's not listening now. I said at the top that Olivia Colman,
right,
they're selling her as Best Actress, and I think she's a Best Supporting Actress at best.
Of course, if you campaign for the other two, they're going to cancel each other out. So does
Olivia
one have a bigger
Colman,
role?
That's a supporting performance.
I think that could be a lead. I really do, but this kind of, you could cut this in three equal pieces as far as how much each actress gets to do.
Right.
I think Emma Stone is very funny in it.
Yeah, it's her first on-screen nudity, by the way.
Okay, another creepy moment. Thanks,
right.
Bill.
I promised you another one.
Screen Actors Guild Ensemble Cast Award, maybe?
Yeah, for the three of them.
Stone.
The men are kind of useless to the women, but they're interesting.
When Stone arrives at the palace, I guess, it's Rachel Weisz that's really in control of the whole place and has the
Right.
The power behind the throne and the attention.
She has the queen's ear and a few other parts.
And Stone's character used to be prominent, and now she's just
thought it was funny.
A lowly peasanty kind of. Right. So she's trying to work her way in. But it's very funny, and a lot of the lines that Stone delivers, which she's come on to by some men in the court. It's very funny. It's very well done. I recommend
it. A lot more commercial, I'm guessing, than The Lobster. Isn't this the same guy that did The Lobster?
So, yes, it's a very different film than The Lobster.
Right.
Where The Lobster was Twilight Zone-y. I mean, this is grounded in reality, even though, again, I don't know how historically accurate this is, but it doesn't go off into a lobster-esque...
We talked on the show, on the CUNY show, about how I can't believe this story was never told before. Like, these two women, you know, sort of trying to get the attention of... Is this, like, based in any kind of reality?
Yeah, apparently it is. It's a true story. I mean, I don't know, you know, nobody knows what the dialogue was back there, but apparently there was Queen Anne in Britain, in England, who
it reminded me of Dangerous Liaisons, actually.
It has that kind of a vibe.
Yeah, it has that kind of thing.
What do you say?
It reminded me of Dangerous Liaisons.
Welcome back to the podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And Bill, are you going to see it now?
I will see this. I'm dying to see The Favorite, actually.
Moving on to Green Book. Okay, so here's a movie we've all seen. Now, Green Book, way up there on my 10 best list that's going to be for 2018. This is based on a true story. It takes place in 1962. And Viggo Mortensen plays a Bronx bouncer who's working at the Copacabana in New York City. And they closed the Copa for a while for renovations. So he needs some work to support his family. And he gets his job offer to drive this classically trained musical pianist, a prodigy, who lives in an apartment above Carnegie Hall, played by Mahershala Ali, you remember him, the Oscar winner for Moonlight, to drive him on a tour. He's going to be doing with his jazz trio, a tour of the Deep South. Now, this is the Deep South in 1962, pre-civil rights, hostile, and Jim Crow laws. So he hires Viggo, who's hysterically funny, by the way, to, step in when there's trouble. And there is lots of racist trouble, in this thing. Viggo...
Explain the title, because that's one of the problems with the movie for me, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't explain what the Green Book was.
You tell the title.
There was a triple-A version of the, I guess, the NAACP or some United Negro organization put together that told African-Americans where they could stay and where they couldn't. And it was kind of a passed around and used... And it's given to the Viggo character at the beginning, and he's told, this is where you can go and this is where you can't. So yes, there's lots of tension
right from
the top.
Right. And the book told black travelers back then, right, the restaurants and the motels, that they would be welcome at.
And Viggo's a racist. Let's set it up a little more so that you understand that there's really some tension here. Viggo's kind of racist. I mean, a couple of plumbers come to fix his sink, and his wife gives him some lemonade, and he throws the glasses away when she's not looking.
And the wife pulls them out.
He's got some learning to do on this trip.
Right, it's kind of a road trip where they, Viggo comes to understand when they go through these racist incidents together, he overcomes his own prejudices. It's a very unlikely pairing. I mean, these guys couldn't be more polar opposites of each other.
And you would think that the Mahershala character...
Bronx thug right out of Goodfellas, whereas Mahershala Ali's character, he's this elegant, well-educated, refined...
You may think too refined when you see the movie, because it looks like they invented this guy for the purposes of this film. But the truth is, I met the son, who's the son of the Viggo character, who wrote the screenplay with a couple of other people, including Peter Farrelly. And that's the other headline here. I mean, we got the guy from Dumb and Dumber dumbfounding audiences by being responsible for this. I don't know what's happened to Bobby, but he's alone on this. Well, you know, they threw a luncheon for the cast and Peter the other day, and Peter talked about the challenges that the studio really didn't know what they had. I mean, until they screened this back in March, and it got a 100% audience rating, they were like kind of not sure what to do with it. So here we are, this many months later, coming to the Oscar season, and all of a sudden, it's got a huge push behind it. And the momentum from Universal and from screenings that have gone extremely well, and they've been working it hard. I mean, there's been a lunch or a dinner every day for the last 2 weeks, and everyone who's anyone was invited to those. If you're working in any aspect of film, you were there. And but anyway, the point is, the thing is solid, very solid. But I'm going
to
wait.
How many events have you gone to for Green Book, Bill McCuddy?
Well, I was invited to three, but I only went to one, and I almost moderated another one. But that's not the point. Do you guys, Bill, let's switch to you. Did you love the movie?
I didn't love it. I thought it was actually very predictable for the most part, and it was just so engineered to be a feel-good movie. Nothing took me by surprise.
It is absolutely that. Yeah. There's no question. I think it delivers on all those. And I think sometimes when you think one thing is going to happen, a cliched moment, like when they come out of a bar, and I'm not going to give too much away, near the end, and you think something's going to happen, something else happens.
Yeah.
I understand what you're talking about, but I think it's formula, and it's good formula.
Yeah.
I think this could win Best Picture. Sure. I really do.
It's what the Oscars
I think it's very.
Like.
It is formula. I agree. But, you know, there's nothing really wrong with that. I mean, yes, I knew that these, and this is not giving too much away either, that these guys, this unlikely pairing would eventually become like friends. You kind of know that. But it is a true story. And, you know, so it's a crowd-pleasing movie. Look, I give Peter Farrelly, who's done There's Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber and Shallow Hal and all that other stuff, credit
for making
a serious film. But because it's Peter Farrelly, there's a lot of humor in this. The Viggo Mortensen character is hysterically funny. He nails the Bronx accent, and he's a very funny character.
As we sit here, we are literally 1,000 feet across the street from Carnegie Hall.
That's right.
That Carnegie Hall, by the way, is in New Orleans, where much of the movie was shot. But I'll tell you something that I've had a sort of second thoughts about. I've seen it. I loved it. I was basking in the glow of it. One problem, well, first of all, there are two problems. The smear that's going to start on it is that, and it already has, a white guy shouldn't be telling a black story. It's a white savior movie because Viggo saves him. But the truth is, it's just the opposite, in my opinion. Mahershala Ali definitely saves the Viggo Mortensen character. But I'll tell you the real problem, I think, and this is going to be the pushback. It's almost too funny. And what I mean by too funny is, it's going to be, I think, a crowd pleaser, and I hope it makes a lot of money. But for Oscar voters, I have to tell you, and I'm going to ask you both the same thing. I'm not sure I ever really think those two are in any danger in the movie. There's no edge to it. Mahershala gets beat up in a bar, and a guy pulls a gun. But there's such a glow to this movie. I mean, there's such a happy polish on the whole thing.
Golden Globes could put this in the comedy category and get away with it.
Golden Globes might put it. That's a really good point.
They
might do that.
The comedy musical category, they could certainly do that.
They could do that.
But...
Oh, there's one other weird irony I want to tell you guys about that I discovered about the Green Book. It listed sundown towns. These are towns where black people are not allowed to be in the streets after dark. You know where one of those sundown towns is very near to us?
Go ahead.
Levittown, New York was a sundown town.
Really?
Yeah.
So African Americans were not allowed in Levittown, New York, to be out after sundown.
That's correct.
So that was part of the idea of Levittown. I didn't know the racist part, but the idea was to build this Shangri-La near New York that all the houses were affordable but beautiful.
It was built for servicemen coming back from World War II.
But could black servicemen not buy in Levittown then?
I'm not sure.
Wow, that is a weird... That's that whole sundown law. Yeah. Then I thought you were going to point out that in the movie they... which is a kind of a spoiler, but they do get arrested after the sundown laws, and they would have actually should have known that.
I don't agree with you, Bill McCuddy. I think there are moments in the film where there is imminent danger for both of these characters. Mahershala gets into, without tipping it off,
there's one thing you definitely shouldn't say about his character that is a surprise.
I pulled myself back from saying that, but no, they're in jail. There's these racist cracker cops that aren't listening to them. You know, no, I think that
we've got to get hold of Mike. We need Mike Sargent.
The other knock on, let's get a black guy in this.
Yeah, let's get Mike to tell us what he thinks.
The other thing about Viggo is I think the knock on him is going to be he's a little too decent, and Vinnie Barbarini,
Barino.
And that's going to be the pushback. Listen, I wish this film the best. I hope it makes millions and millions of dollars. I'll tell you that it's not tracking well. It's one of the reasons it's gotten moved around, and they didn't know quite when to
what
open it.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that they're showing it to select audiences who are saying they like it, but they're...
Test awareness. And
right,
a lot
right.
Of
and are they
going to...
I keep calling
TV
it,
every five
and
minutes.
I keep calling it green card for people, and they go, do you mean green
card?
That's
book? A Gerard so, Depardieu.
Yes, masterpiece.
Westheimer.
Depardieu. So I hope this movie does well, and I hope it goes all the way to the Oscars.
I love the movie. I think it's, yes, there are some historical lessons in there. And I think that Linda Cardellini, who plays Viggo's wife, is terrific in a small
She
role.
Was charming at the luncheon, Neil. She asked about you.
Yeah.
No, she and, didn't come to the luncheon.
By the way, this running gag, in case you're still with us at this particular point, is that Bill McCuddy goes to all the luncheons and all the receptions for all these movies, and Bill Regoli and I...
That's not entirely true. You guys get invited
to
BFCA. You get invited to BFCA stuff just like I do.
Yeah,
like the
BFCA
Roma thing
stuff
last
in
week.
Los Angeles, but sure, I get invited to things.
Yeah, I'm on a strange list for that reason, too.
Rub
this
it
is
in.
Not our place to...
All right, let's move on to Widows.
We're going to talk about Widows.
Now, Widows was a movie that was unbelievably highly touted before it was released.
Steve McQueen told me the funniest thing at a luncheon the other day.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
He
wasn't that funny.
Entertainment Weekly on their fall movie preview did a big spread on this particular movie. It got a lot of hype. They were talking Oscars on it. And I don't think that, I think this movie might just kind of die out. What do you
Mrs. think? McCuddy loved it. We should tell people it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. It's almost like a female version of Heat. It's a heist film, but it has a lot. Well,
it's Ocean's 8 without the fun.
You
want
to do it?
It is Ocean's 8 with it's
you want to do the plot?
I'm going to do Instant Family. So
well, I'm just going to say it's a gritty heist film where the wives or girlfriends of four key guys are killed early on, and
the four guys are trying to pull off a heist. It goes wrong,
right?
And
okay.
They all die, and then one of the wives.
This weekly, you begin the story, and I'll finish by Neil Rosen. It's brought to you by LaCroix.
Go on.
No, you're fine. I mean,
Viola
Davis is the
widow of Liam Neeson,
right?
Who is approached by some tough guys that. That her husband owes a lot of money to.
Right. And, they were owed the money that was in this Brinks truck that blows up at the beginning.
So she gets all the widows from the other people that died in this heist that went awry, wrong, you know, whatever. And they decide she finds the plans of the heist.
For his next heist.
What?
For his next heist.
Right. And they're gonna do that. They're going to pull that off.
There are a lot of subplots in here involving Colin Farrell running for local office, councilman, or no, I think it's a councilman
or
something.
Played by Robert Duvall.
Yeah, Robert Duvall, who chews the scenery up, who I thought was retired, and who Steve McQueen didn't...
Who do you think was retired?
Duvall. And Steve McQueen was unknown to Duvall, and Duvall had to call Francis Ford Coppola, which is kind of a funny story told at the luncheon. And he vouched for him. So, also, he said Viola Davis is the greatest living actress on the planet. She's quite good in this, but it's long.
Who said that? Duvall said that or Steve McQueen?
No, Steve McQueen said it.
Okay.
I'm sure Duvall likes her too. So, as I said earlier, I think it's too long. I don't like.
Sorry about that.
Take it again.
Pick it up. Yeah. As I said earlier, I think it's too long, and I don't like some of the plot twists. There are a lot of plot twists in this thing. And there are also a couple of plot holes or things that are introduced and don't.
You know
who
I really liked
off.
In it was Elizabeth Debicki.
I like Elizabeth Debicki a lot.
You know where we saw her before?
Yeah, she's been in a couple of things.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
She was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. with a high coif, and that she was the bad chick in that. She was great in that.
She's good.
She takes a slap from... Viola Davis and gives a slap back to her that I was told was real. Look, I wish this was a great Steve McQueen movie. I love a heist movie, but this isn't a heist movie. This is a lot of women sitting around going, our husband's died and we owe this money. And then the heist itself is quite a small, straightforward part of it. There's a miraculous car that shows up out of nowhere and it's like, so annoying. It's upsetting.
Steve McQueen directed 12 Years a Slave, and this is a big departure from that movie, although he does try to get socially conscious by, you know, showing you corruption in Chicago and, you know, brutality towards. There's one scene in particular where a kid is pulled over, a black kid is pulled over, just because of the fact of the color of his skin. So there is some, you know, social. What's the word I'm looking for? Social
relevance.
Yes, relevance to the film, but predominantly it's a. No, I think it's a caper film, and I think they're trying to figure it out. I think it's a melodrama. I was not.
It's not making any money this week, unfortunately.
I was not bowled over by the movie. I don't think it's. You know, I think it's okay. I think it's okay. I don't think it's like, wow, this is great.
It has fans. I will say that. Ann Thompson.
You think it's going to the Oscars? You think this thing's getting nominations?
No.
What do you think?
No, I don't think so either.
What do you think of the movie?
It was okay, but as Bill said, it got long, man. It felt long. And they really skimp on the how we put together the heist bit, too. Most heist movies, they show them training. They're doing this. They do a little bit of that.
They buy a car at an auction, which is ridiculous. They're a truck. They didn't need to do it that way. Yeah. The scene where they get the guns is not that clever, kind of, sort of, but not really.
I don't even remember how they got the gun.
It's okay. It's not great.
She goes to a gun show.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. That's
plays the crying, beat-up
See, unmemorable. There you go.
Yeah, so there you go.
The ending makes no sense. Two of the characters show up at the end in a diner, and you have no idea what the relationship is there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well,
half the people told me they're going to do another heist, and half the people said they aren't. So anyway, Mrs. McCuddy liked it. It may.
On my Big Apple rating scale, out of a possible four, I would give Widows, 2.5 to 3 apples.
Three is good. So, but I don't think it's that good.
Between 2.5.
Two and three quarters apples.
There you go. You know, what about you? How many?
Yeah, 2.5.
You?
Two.
Two.
Nice.
Yeah, so that
two
one,
and a quarter for the length.
That one didn't.
Yeah.
What did you think of Viola? Forget about Steve McQueen. What did you think of Viola Davis's performance?
I thought she was great, but she's in this movie kind of by herself in terms of what she accomplishes versus the other women.
You bowled over by any of the performances?
I liked Elizabeth Debicki the best, to be honest with you.
There's no reason for any of them, except this moral obligation they may have to these bad guys, to go and do this.
No.
Debicki is the one, if I'm not mistaken, whose mother tells her...
Right.
Played by Jackie Weaver.
Yeah. Jackie Weaver.
Australian actress. Right.
Tells her to go out and be a prostitute.
Yeah.
So there's a positive female message.
Well, I think she's telling her really to become a woman and find a man.
Yeah. Be a sugar baby.
What's that?
Yeah, she go out and find a sugar daddy.
So then there's a movie called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which is the latest Coen Brothers movie, which is... made for Netflix and can be seen on Netflix. Now, this is kind of interesting to me before I even get into the movie itself because, you know, I watched the movie on Netflix and it is a full-blown, big-budget movie that could be released in theaters. And this is kind of what's going on now is these movies.
Well, I saw it in a big screen at the New York Film Festival because it opened or closed or did something.
Right, but before we even get into this, what do you make of these movies that are not getting theatrical releases first that you could see on Netflix first? You know, do you think it...
What's the... Alfonso Cuarón, am I saying that correctly? The guy who did Roma. He was asked the other night at this Q&A about, hey, I thought you want everybody to see your movies on a big screen. And he said, look, the reality of my movies is 90% of the people see it on at home anyway. So make peace with that. Make the best movie you can and hopefully people see it. But at least they see it no matter where it happens.
I got to get this out of my head. Is, you know... We used to have this expression, straight to video,
video.
It doesn't have that stigma anymore. I know where you're going.
Right.
It's not.
So when I see that it's on TV first, you somehow, because of all those years of that, it never got a theatrical release. It went straight to DVD. It just came out on Showtime.
Well, I got to tell you, this doesn't feel like a Coen Brothers movie in the sense that it should be on in a big screen.
Because
it's very uneven.
Well, let me just say that I have to start acclimating myself the fact that they're not lesser movies, that the fact that they go straight to Netflix.
There's a whole generation that doesn't even make the differentiation anymore.
And do you think that these movies can win Oscars if they're on Netflix first?
Well, no, technically they can't.
Well, let's say they have a week for qualifying.
I think this does qualify because it was at a couple of festivals and I'm sure they four-walled it somewhere.
Yeah.
But you don't...
Although Netflix basic... business model is, it goes straight there.
So let's say Netflix did A Star Is Born, hypothetically speaking, okay, which is making a ton of money at the box office, okay? And they had the same plan in mind that they would, release it to Netflix like they did with Ballad of Buster Scruggs or the Adam Sandler movies that they make specifically for Netflix. Would they release it? Would they change their model and say, no, we could make hundreds of millions of dollars first in the theaters? And
They say no. I mean, but think about what you're saying. It means that they literally wouldn't buy A Star Is Born. If there was a movie that had to be seen on a big screen or was going to make money in the theaters before it got to Netflix, it's just not a Netflix movie.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah. I mean, how many people would really, honestly, go to pay to see the Ballad of Buster Scruggs on a big screen? Maybe here on the coast, on the East Coast and the West Coast, in the middle of the country? Nah, they don't want to see that stuff.
And they also, if it's a Netflix production, you know at any day now it's going to be on your TV. So it's not, there's no incentive unless it's something like Gravity or A Star Is Born or maybe even Bohemian Rhapsody that you have to see on a big screen.
So so here's the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Joel and Ethan Coen movie. It's six separate stories set in the Old West. They have an affection for the Old West, having done True Grit, and they've done other stuff that's set. Even No Country for Old Men, which was contemporary West, is set, in the West. But this is the Old West, and there's six different stories. One of them has James Franco as an unlucky bank robber, let's say that one. The first one has Tim Blake Nelson as a he's Buster Scruggs, the title character in the movie.
He's hilarious.
And he's a singing cowboy who's also a psychopathic serial killer. Liam Neeson's in one. That's an interesting one. I don't know how much I really particularly cared for that story, but he's going around with a travel,
like a little freak show, sort of.
Yeah, that he, and passes around,
Very odd. Listen.
Okay. But then there's one, the one I really did like. There's the performance. I mean, Zoe Kazan's in one about this, single woman who's going across the frontier in a caravan in these, horse and wagon things, heading to Portland, Oregon to possibly meet her, a possible suitor who could marry her.
It's the sure thing, but 100 years early.
And she meets this guy on the... Her brother dies in the beginning of the story, and she meets this other guy who's running the caravan. I always find it interesting in these things to see how people used to walk across the country. They're... The wagons are carrying all the supplies, but they're basically walking like about 10, 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting. So I thought Zoe Kazan was very good. There's also another story with Tom Waits as a gold prospector.
Yeah.
And
that's probably one of the least effective ones.
And although it doesn't really go anywhere, I mean,
it doesn't pan out. Sorry.
The cinematography and all of this is just.
No, it looks gorgeous.
It's breathtaking. And, the last story sucks. It's with Tyne Daly, but that's okay. I mean, it's kind of like a mood piece, and I kind of was interested. None of the stories go on for that long, so if you're kind of bored with the story, it's like it kind of ends.
It's kind of like Rod Serling goes to the Old West, and
I haven't seen it.
Well, if you want to play Will Bill Go, I mean, it's a Netflix rental. You can stop and start it at home because it is six different episodes.
Yeah, you could just watch a bunch of stories. Would you classify it as funny because there's
parts, but not enough.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a comedy. Like the Tom Waits thing has no humor to it.
No,
the Franco thing had a kind of funny line.
It's a dark comedy.
Yeah, it's not one of the Coen brothers' best movies, but I did kind of enjoy the thing, But you've kind of like lately, I've come to enjoy the more recent Coen Brothers films to some extent, even more than some of the movies before that. Not Fargo, which is to me the gold standard. That's their best movie. But you didn't like Inside Llewyn Davis.
No, I didn't.
You didn't like that George Clooney one with the Hollywood thing that I thought was kind of fun.
No, that was the Caesar where he was.
Hail Caesar. Oh, that was uneven. Talking about uneven.
I don't know. I find these things to be just kind of like. And the fact that it's on
Netflix.
They're
diverting. There's no question that they're diverting.
The fact that it's on Netflix, you don't have to go out to see it. It's there for free if you subscribe to Netflix.
Boom. You can watch it right now after you listen to us, but I don't think you should.
Well, I think it's okay.
Hey, now, next week we're going to go see...
You play the game, Bill Bregoli. Do you have any... Are you
going
to see
it? Actually, I'm going to see it. I can't... I have to recuse myself from this game because I'm already committed to see it.
Well, are you more looking forward to seeing it on the
big?
Now
I'm
not?
Seeing it on the big screen. No, now I know, now I'm going to have to bring something to eat.
I win. Thank you.
Yeah, Bill wins. But I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it actually at the Museum of the Moving Image at some...
Cool
soiree they're having, and I think we all got invited.
Well, it is beautiful. So, I mean, it's on a big
screen,
two blocks
my house, it'll be nice. I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a time for family this weekend. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, if your religion allows you to celebrate Thanksgiving. And
this is what I love about Thanksgiving. No gifts, family. It's an American holiday. It's not a religious holiday, and it's just about... you know, just being with your family, and there's not all this commercialism attached to it.
Well, speaking of families, Instant Family is the one that the McCuddies are going to tomorrow on Thanksgiving
Day. Right, we're
going to
talk about it.
So we'll talk about that next week, the new Mark Wahlberg movie.
We'll save that for next week. Yeah. And, you know, as I say on the show every week, what do we do on this program, Bill McCuddy?
We ask you to repeat everything because you mumble.
No,
we watched the bad movies so you don't have to.
All right, so happy Thanksgiving, everybody. For Neil Rosen, you can follow me at Neil Rosen Apples. Bill Bregoli, you can't follow, but try to befriend them on Facebook.
Well, the cops do. And
Bill
McCuddy
on
Twitter
at Bill McCuddy. At Bill McCuddy. And thanks for happy Thanksgiving again to everyone, and thanks for sitting around talking movies. We'll sit around talking movies with you again next week.